Welcome to the healing power of your dreams here on UK Health Radio with dreams and spirituality author and expert Teresa Chung and journalist and TV producer Margarita Mitchell Pollock. Each week, along with a recurring dream special guest or two, we will explore the healing power of your intuition by day and your dreams by night. So join us live each week and let's discover the unexpected together. Picture this. It's 2:22 a.m. You've woken up. The world is silent. Your heart is pounding. Your breath is shallow. The dream felt more real than reality, a voice, a symbol, a presence, a feeling you can't shake. Now, if you've ever woken up between 2 and 5 a.m., don't feel frustrated. Be curious. Be excited. Many moons ago, when I was considering the contemplative life, this was the sacred hour, the call to prayer, the hour when the noise of the world falls away and something deeper can finally be heard. So, if your dreaming mind chooses to wake you up in the small hours of the morning, it's for a good reason. Pause, take a few slow breaths, write down whatever is there on your mind, even if it makes no sense. Your dreaming mind has something so urgent to share, it pulled you out of sleep. Pay attention to those early morning wakings, to the dreams or thoughts on your mind that make you wonder, was that just my brain or was that something more? What if your dreams are not stories your mind creates but signals your soul receives? What if every dream carries a frequency and that frequency is either healing you, warning you, or awakening you? Right now, think of your most recent dream, even just a fragment. Don't analyze it, just feel it. Was it heavy, electric, expansive, dark, loving, urgent? Dreams don't whisper in logic, they transmit in vibration. And here is the truth we rarely say out loud. If you can change your frequency, you can change your life, perhaps even the world. On today's show, we're going to explore the space between the frequency of dreams and the great recalibration of 2026. Our guest has been called the godfather of frequencies, a leader's leader, a healer's healer, a coach to coaches. Mazzati, like Madonna, he just needs the one name for people who know and love him, is a man whose multiple near-death experiences did not end his story. They expanded it beyond the limits of space and time. His life's work is devoted to eliminating human suffering and awakening human consciousness. After crossing the threshold between life and death more than once, he returned with deep knowledge, extraordinary advanced understanding, blending frequencies, quantum physics, and space-time travel into practical tools for real-time transformation. If you've ever felt you are more powerful than you've been taught, if you sense your dreams and intuitions are trying to upgrade you, if you know suffering is not the end of the story, stay with us. This conversation is meant for you. And you can learn more about Mazzati's visionary work at thexicode.com. That's thexicode.com. Mazzati, honored to welcome you to the healing power of your dreams. Hello.
Hello, Teresa. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you. Now, we're going to dive into your near-death experiences and how they transformed you shortly. But first, let's dive into 2026. Collectively, it feels like a year of upheaval, politically, culturally, even within long-standing institutions like the monarchy over here in the UK. Authority itself is being questioned everywhere. And before we get into those specific global shifts, I want to ask you about the spiritual movement right now. We often hear, change yourself before you change the world. And I believe that. I teach that. But has the focus on inner alignment gone too far now? Are we so busy enjoying ourselves healing that we are forgetting to step out and create tangible change? And more directly, have some spiritual leaders been complicit in silence when it comes to the injustices in the world right now?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, Teresa, everybody wants or seeks truth. But unfortunately, there's only like one truth that the universe works on, and it's not really, the concepts that we hold truth today. It literally is. It goes back to just straight out physics. There's just straight out physics of the universe that's been, rendering itself or evolving over, gosh, over 4 or 5, maybe more billions of years. So that's the truth that we talk about. When it comes into like human standards, because of free will, you have the concept of morality and this and all that, but even morality is based on, human conditions, human experiences. Even morality in now is being tested based on, say, the pressure test of the physics of the universe. So what we're seeing right now is a great opportunity for us to realign back into, say, the original architecture of who we are. And that's what we do. So if your spiritual practice is not working, this is a pressure test. And this is where you have that opportunity to go, gosh, whatever religion or whatever spiritual practice that I practice, it's not working. It's not helping me heal. It's not making me whole. It doesn't make me complete. So again, question it, because that's what the universe is like, hey, your process, is it working or not? It's not judging, is just pushing it to the limit to see if it'll can withstand the next billions of years. On the flip side, the sciences, again, pressure tested. If it's not working, everything will collapse. And that's what we're seeing today. The financial systems, even love relationships, and all that we think of is being pressure tested, because we need to go to the next evolution of who we are.
I couldn't agree more. I hear you. But why are intuitives, sensitives, wise teachers, visionaries, why are they not in positions of authority? Why are they not stepping outside now, this meditation bubble, which is important? Actually, if you know how to heal your heart, you have a sense of how to change the world. Surely now is the time for sensitive souls to come out, as it were, and be in positions of authorities and bring compassion to it.
Yeah, and my answer might like startle a lot of people. Just because you're a sensitive soul doesn't mean you're an enlightened being.
No.
Just because say that you're wealthy, it doesn't mean that you're highly intelligent and you should tell other people what to do, especially if it's not in the field of your wealth. So, and that's the same thing. We have to go a step or a layer deeper, Teresa, and really start to understand like who we are or how we got there. And that's the key that most people miss. So, and I've associated it to time coins. Time coins is basically how much of your presence did you, say, spend, right? How much of your essence, your presence, your life force did you sacrifice or spend to achieve your spiritual notions, your spiritual gifts, your wealth, your love, or anything like that? And that's what the universe, say, resonates at. And if you've spent way too many time coins, if you've, say, sold yourself, as the standard label goes, well, right now the universe is calling the debt. It's like, hey, we have to go to the next level. Everything is in accounting, and to go to the next level, you have to pay the debt of, say, your soul or your essence. A lot of spiritual people, a lot of sensitive people, and I work with a ton of them. I work with a lot of psychologists, healers, all those individuals, that help people. They're always sacrificing their own presence to help others. You don't go anywhere that way. You just create a cycle, and it's a vicious cycle. Same thing with, again, the financial system. People go, well, if I become wealthy and then I can come back and help the world, philanthropy. And that doesn't work either, because what the universe is asking for, Teresa, is how coherent were you? How much of your essence did you learn or evolve into? That's all it's asking. It's a very simple equation. And the time is due, and if you're in the negative numbers, like the people, on the list that are coming out, no matter if they're on the spiritual side, the science side, the wealth side, It doesn't matter because that's what's coming out is literally, hey, you sold your presence to achieve, physical wealth or spiritual wealth. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely. I mean, if there is an afterlife, I think you won't be judged on how you followed or copied others, but how you embody your full potential and how you were you. How much of your you-ness did you discover? Love that. And thank you for mentioning these spiritual figures that are now being named, prominent figures
Yes.
like Chopra facing exposure. And he's not the first male spiritual leader accused of grifting or narcissism. There is a
Right.
history there. Is it time, in your opinion, Mazati? This is hard because you're a man, but for more women to hold spiritual platforms that men have traditionally dominated. And society seems so eager to elevate confident men to that status. Now, I was honored to be named this year in the Spiritual 100 list. That's controversial, that list, and there are people on there who shouldn't, and there are people who are,
Of course.
should be included. But there are only 22 women on that list.
Okay.
Do you think this is because women tend to have an instinctive sense that they need to embody their teaching before they go out there and shout from the rooftops about it? How can we change this imbalance? That's what I'm saying.
Well, whether it's men or women, it doesn't really matter. It's your coherence. That matters. How coherent are you? If you're running, say, tragic systems of human nature, as a lot of women are, right? And whether the men oppressed women or, society, they're acknowledging that they're oppressed. They're acknowledging that they're minimized. So if you're acknowledging that, well, you're not going to be seen, especially in today's world. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, if your frequency is brilliant enough, it'll outshine any dogma or standard of society. Unfortunately, women, are always, say, fighting or always minimizing themselves. And they're, say, subservient at some level. Well, if you're a subservient frequency, pushing against the system, you're within the system and you're part of the problem. So you have to step out of the system and not define yourself the way women have been defined in society. It doesn't matter who put that label on you, you have to step out of that label. Just like, I tell people who have been abused back in the day, it's like, okay, you've been abused, but what is the frequency underneath, whether it, you, attached, say, that frequency to you, or the logistics or the programming, or it was from your parents that you just inherited? It doesn't matter. You have to own that frequency and go, I need to change this. And this is where we start to evolve. And as we evolve, there is no, it doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, or anything in between. It's just like, what is your frequency coherent? In today's society, Teresa, this is where, we're talking about Deepak Chopra and, many others. It's like, it doesn't matter what label that you're carrying. It just matters on the coherence. It's just, we are being, say, judged, not in, say, this world, but judged on a higher level. The higher your frequency, the more you evolve. And the more you will be trusted in the near future. Because nowadays, you can't trust on anything, whether they're women, whether they're men, or anything else. It doesn't matter. It's your coherence that'll matter for you, your frequency that you're resonating at.
Thank you. I'm guessing you do a lot of courses and a lot of teaching.
Yes.
In my time, I've done workshops as well. And what I'm saying is, women do seem to have more of an awareness that they need to work on adjusting their frequency. Because I'd be interested to know what the proportion of male female is of people who attend your work. Because I know that when I do, maybe because I'm a woman myself, that it's predominantly female. So they
Yes.
have this awareness that something needs to shift. But then
Yes.
it's not expressing itself in the world.
Yes, and that's a key that, that's why our clientele is, more female dominant. Yes, they have an awareness, but they don't have the tools. The tools that they use are normally of, say, of the same reality. And as Einstein or whoever said it, if you're trying to create, solutions from the same reality that you exist in, it's just not going to help. So you have to, like, step out of that reality and understand, what tools do help. You have to step up. So in that case, yes, there are more, say, more women are intuitive, more women are sensing that there's something wrong. They don't have the tools, just like men. They don't have the tools to go, oh, this is it. And that's what we offer. A whole set of new tools to identify who we are that bypasses, again, feminine, masculine, or any of those, say, stigmas that society operates on. It's a, Teresa, think of it this way. If you're wealthy, therefore X has to happen, and that's not true. People go, well, I'm wealthy and that's my, I'm more evolved. We have less problems and all that, and it's not true at all. It isn't, it's just that they might go through their problems, more elegantly, but they still have the problems. They still age the same way. They still get diseased the same way. Same thing with women who are very intuitive, like shit, something's wrong, but, and then they run the same process. So, and no, just to go deeper, why are more women intuitive? That's really the question you have to ask. Is it because they're enlightened that they're intuitive, or have they been oppressed, traumatized, turned into like physical possession? So they're hyper aware. So a lot of people who are hyper aware usually came from trauma and abuse, just like rabbits and prey, for example. They're always aware of their environment. Gazelle, in Africa, they're always aware of their environment. They're highly sensitive to their environment. So maybe
Fascinating.
that's why it's not because they're assertive. It's just that they've been dominated to be oppressed, and they're hyper aware.
Wow.
So sure, they're spiritual, but it matter. Yeah, they're sensitive to their environment. That's literally what, say, spirituality has turned out to be.
So you're talking about recalibration here and
Yes.
upgrading. I love the mobile phone way of expressing it. It makes it very clear and easy to understand, and that's very, very helpful. Thank you, Mazati. I want to
Absolutely.
widen the lens to the global stage and the challenges of long-held narratives, but we've got to go to an ad break. The material world always breaks into this show. If you're listening, I want you to ask yourself what Mazati's words are awakening with you. Stay with us. I'm Dreams author and expert Teresa Chung here with the wisdom of Mazati on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. We'll all see you on the other side.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, everyone. Mazati is here. And before the break, we were discussing the collective collaboration, a recalibration of 2026 and widening the lens to the global stage and the challenging of long-held narratives. Now, last week on this show, I spoke about Prince Andrew, former Prince Andrew, with our guest and spiritual activist, Kelechi Okafor. Now, the very day after that aired, on his 66th birthday, 66 there, that number, he was arrested. Now, some might call that coincidence. Others see symbolism, synchronicity, even cosmic timing. From a frequency and consciousness perspective, are moments like that, in your opinion, Mazati, signs of recalibration? And more importantly, in times of collective chaos, how can ordinary people avoid being destabilized and instead use those signs, those moments, as catalysts for awakening?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, there is no coincidence. Coincidences, they're not just random events, although at our level of like science or observation, we think it is coincidence. But if we always go to a higher level frequency or understanding, again, it's just the laws of physics, right? Everything works on the laws of physics, no matter how random the event. So in today's world, society, or as a whole consciousness, and it's not just human societies, it's the universe or the universes that are, say, ramping up. They're evolving. And that's really the key. Society, I'm sorry, the universes are, say, evolving to a higher level. So what does that mean? Time and space is becoming more and more efficient. As time and space more becomes more and more efficient, well, this is where, lies or mistruths, because they're inefficient, not because they're immoral or not, because they're inefficient. They create a lot of drag for, say, the universe, the planetary systems. Humans are a very tiny part of that planetary system. So in this case, as time and space becomes more efficient, you can't hold on to the lies or the weight of who you are not. So it's actually exposing what you're really not. Unfortunately, those who have been exposed, there's a lot of heaviness in that. And as you, well, I'll give you an example, Teresa. Say that, God, or however you define that, natural intelligence is healing you, but you're 90% cancerous. Well, the 90% cancer has to go. But if you're 90% cancerous, that means that it's only 10% of you have, say, can survive. In that case, a lot of those people, like Prince Andrew and many other individuals, well, let's just say they're more cancerous than most. And then, unfortunately, their lives have to, say, end or get distorted or anything of that nature. Does that make sense
It
for you?
does. It most certainly does. All I know is that I'm super proud to be a Brit at the moment, and the courage it's taking for people to start questioning what the narratives they've been told. But let's course correct now and get personal, Zati.
Of
As
course.
I said, you are. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thank you.
Many people know you for your near-death experiences, but I'd like to go back to before then. Who were you internally? Not professionally, but privately, and what fears
Certainly.
and ambitions or quiet struggles was shaping your life before you became the great Mazati? And do you miss that earlier version of yourself? And also, I just want to say the obvious, three near-death experiences. Now that feels almost greedy. How did they happen? A lot of questions there, but just I know your sense of how to answer them.
No, I love it. Well, before my first near-death experience, I was that person. I was a young kid, late teens, early 20s. The first near-death happened, and at that level, I wasn't like a normal teenager. I had great fun, but I was contemplating on, who we really are as humans. I was always intrigued by it. So I would study a lot of the religions out there. It didn't matter what religion. I just wanted to, devour the knowledge, because but those religions, I asked the harder questions. And if there's like holes in the system or exceptions to the rule, even at that time, I'm going, and kids are like that too. And that's why they keep asking questions, right? It's like, why? Because it's not a first principle. It's not a first principle solution or answer. So a lot of religions out there, and basically it's like, just try, like, well, wait a second, how can I trust something that has a lot of exceptions to the rule? So that didn't satisfy me. And then, at that young age, you want to become wealthy because people go, well, if you become wealthy, you can solve the problems of the world. And I'm looking at, the problems of the world, and it's like it's the same problems as, 100 or 1,000 years ago. It's just evolved into bigger and bigger problems, maybe. And I'm going, well, that didn't solve it. And, my doctor, I mean, my dad, he was a very successful doctor. So we had a lot of prominent people, at the dinner table. And I would sit with my dad and I would listen to their problems, and they had the same problems as everybody else, relationship issues, diseases, and all that. I'm going, so that didn't work either because they're not any happier than anybody else. So I'm going, what is the real answer? What is the real answer? And well, I wanted to know that real answer so bad, the universe answered. It's like, do you really want to know? It's like, yeah, I really want to know. And that's where my first near death came in. It was a warehouse accident. I was a young kid, college job warehouse, where I had my jaws crushed. And then that's where I noticed. It's like, as I literally, my consciousness, the identity of who you are, some people might call it their spirit, but I don't like the use that word because again it's distorted by religions and society. But your pure who you are, the potential of who you are, I separated from, say, my time-bound identity of who you are. And this is the closest thing many feel is like when you're a child, you feel limitless. That's the version of you that I'm talking about. Or when you're older, right? You feel the power within you, but it's like, gosh, how do I access that power within me? And I did. And that was the first understanding of, say, oh, it's like, oh, this is, say, the avatar that we should be following. And it was a beautiful experience. And, I went through, the possibilities of who we could be. The love that is up at that level was quite fantastic. The potential, the wealth at that level is like, gosh, that is what we're really about. And there was no exceptions to the rule, Teresa. No exceptions at all. And then I came back into this reality, back into my body. And that's where, I found myself in the hospital with my jaws wired shut because my jaws, I had crushed my jaws. But it was a beautiful experience. And I never, obviously, you can't forget an experience. When you're that close to, say, to the intelligence that rendered you here, it's like an amazing, presence, right? And that sticks with you. So that was, you said three. So that first experience was literally being an apprentice, understanding how or why we're here, but I longed for how do I bring that knowledge at that level into physical reality for myself and others. So it led me to the second near-death experience, which was a drowning. And it's all on my website, the details of it. And that I started to understand the science, the real science that has no, say, exceptions to the rule. And this is how I help transform people's lives, diseases or anything like that. Again, I'm not claiming that I cure people. I'm just claiming that I awaken people's natural potential so they can heal themselves. So in that case, the second near death gave me my abilities to understand and see and pinpoint exactly what's holding you back. You don't have to tell me anything. And it also allowed me, again, like I said, the science of say, understanding who we are and improving it, not just for myself, but for others as well. And so that's that second near-death experience. So that was more of a journeyman. Journeymen are, they understand the tools, they understand the trade. And then, gosh, over 100,000 client sessions, that's a lot of experiences. That's a lot of, say, scientific research. You become a mastery level. So the third near death that I had was like, say, mastery level, understanding it, owning it, and operating from that level.
Well, thank you for sharing that. But I can feel people listening thinking, well, do I have to go through something like a drowning to access higher awareness? I don't want anyone to think that. I know you're going to reassure us that you don't need to die to upgrade your life. But
You do
one
not.
thing, is there a practical, safe, non-death
Absolutely.
or injury-related way that something they can do begin right now as they're listening?
Yeah,
to upgrade.
yes, you can. Again, you do not have to die. There are many
Thank you for
individuals.
that. I'm relieved.
Yes.
I like
Yeah, there are billions of people who have died before you. You can learn from them. You
Yeah.
know, I'm sure you have loved ones that have passed away, even if they didn't come back, you know. So yeah, you can learn from death or an awakening, as I call it, without dying, without abusing yourself, without doing all those things to step out of your body. The best way is what I call spatial referencing. Where it gets you out of your mind and into, say, a higher realm. A lot of people nowadays, they use psychedelics. That's kind of a death of, say, your mental or your time-bound state. You escape, but then those people don't do it properly either, you know, because again, it's an escape. It's not an expansion. So you don't want to get into those states as well. You want to do, you know, psychedelics, plant medicines, you know, properly. You want to do it as an expansive
Can I
state.
suggest music? Music is an
Oh,
escape, isn't it? Sound healing, that's a way, isn't it?
yes.
Surely, and it's often estimated and it's safe.
Oh yeah, music is really fantastic, but the key is, are you escaping into your music? Spatial referencing, like I was saying earlier, is starting to understand the reality. Spatial referencing is basically syncing your GPS system of where you are here in, say, in a dimension of space and time compared to your higher version. So this is where, as you observe, and it's really easy, you know, you observe an object around you and a point on your body. Simple. Like if there's a sound coming around you know, like notice the direction of the sound and a point on your body. You know, there's like a picture hanging there and a point on your body. I know it sounds really easy. It sounds really crazy, but it gets you out of your mind. It starts to help you understand, say, the filters that you are using, you know, from childhood, from generational patterns, you know, from societal patterns. It removes all those distortions and it basically tells you, you are here in this moment of time. It helps you know, get out of your mindset. And then you start to become the observer of who you are, your physical formation of who you are. And then if you're doing spatial referencing while you're doing music or yoga or whatever that you do to, you know, get into a meditative state, it doesn't really matter. Spatial references as you're doing it, and you'll see it'll become more euphoric. And
Thank
that's where you
you.
start to connect to that power of that death experience.
Now, I referenced music as I was trying to lead it there. You led it away, but I'm going to bring it back because music's my meditation. I love it. It's how I not escape, but it's how I feel most creative and intuitive. And I did ask you to choose a song for our UK Health Radio listeners today. We
Yeah.
can't play it all because I don't want to waste any too much pressure of your precious time with the music. I want to hear your voice. But before we head into the ad break, I'd love you to step into the role of DJ Mazzotti and introduce the track. Tell us why you chose it and what frequency or feeling you want our listeners to receive. Johan, our producer, will cue it up right after you introduce it. Take it away, Mazzotti.
Well, actually, my wife picked it.
Ah, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, my wife picked it. Yeah, it's called Feeling Good, and it's just a very different version, you know, and it allows you in. But we'll go one step more. If you know, if music is your choice, how about if I, whether you're listening, say, on live or recording on this, how about if I generate frequencies behind the music? Because that's what we do. And, you know, just get into a meditative state while you're listening, and we'll bring in that feel good without the escape mechanism that most people do. So you'll just feel good afterwards as well, very deep inside. How's that sound? Is that okay?
That sounds perfect.
All right. All right. Let's do it.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. On by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, It's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running.
Every powerful dream, every hero's journey has a guide, someone who helps decode the symbols, someone who holds up the signposts when the path gets unclear. And this is the moment I'm going to introduce ours. Now, my wonderful co-anchor, journalist and TV producer, Margarita Mitchell-Pollock, can't be with us today. She's absolutely gutted to miss this amazing conversation. And Margarita, I know you're listening and we're sending you love and you'll be back very soon. But I'm delighted to welcome a very special guest co-presenter to UK Health Radio today, Dr. Amy Robbins. Amy is a clinical psychologist and intuitive spiritual teacher. And if her voice sounds familiar, no, it's not because she sounds just a little bit like Janice from Friends. Sorry, Amy, I had to say it. It's because she hosts one of the world's leading podcasts. And I think it was just in the top 10, wasn't it, in the US? Wow, exploring these very themes. And her podcast, if you haven't listened to it already, check it out. It's called Life, Death, and the Space Between. I've had the honor of being a guest on her podcast, and Margarita is a devoted listener, so it feels beautiful synchronicity that she is here with us today. She joins us from the United States, an American voice in a very global conversation, and I have a feeling this won't be the last time we hear her wonderful, beautiful voice on this show. Amy, welcome. Now, you've been listening closely to this conversation, and I know you have questions for Mazzotti.
Thank you so much for having me. And Mazzotti, nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you, Amy.
I don't know how I feel about the Janice comment, but we'll go with that. We'll go with that. So as I was listening, I'm always thinking about things from a psychological lens and how Absolutely. We move towards the embodiment. And you started when Teresa came on talking mm-hmm. about the embodiment of truth. Yes. What does that look like? And what does it look like when, and you said there's one universal truth. What does yes. it look like when people hold different truths as truth?
Right. So, you know, at one level, say at the highest level of frequencies, and again, that truth is not based on religions or anything like that, Amy. It's just literally based on, say, the physics of the universe that has worked for over billions of years, because that's how we stress test truth. So it's not about religions, political views, or anything like that, your ideology of who you are. At that level, you are, say, pure potential. If you accessed who you are without your generational patterns, without, societal patterns, without your genetics, you know, all those are basically lies that you live. Those are filters that limit your pure potential. So what I'm saying is, like, let's release. And this is, it happens naturally. In nature, there is only one truth. It's the highest level truth. If you look at nature, every season, every moment, it's evolving to a better version of itself. And it goes on and on and on. Hence, you know, billions of years, it's created, say, some perfection. In human society, because of, we have free will, we get to choose the distortions of our past, or, you know, our parents like hand us and we inherit the distortions of the parents, the grandparents, and so on and so on and so on. That is not who you really are. You know, people would not choose to be diseased. People would not choose, despite spiritual notions that I came here to learn a lesson. Well, your lesson literally is to expose the truth that's deep inside you. Expose that pure potential of who you are and move away from the limitations of who you are. So that's the truth that I'm talking about. And the way to do that is to be an observer of how you, say, create the reality, because you are a master creator.
So it really does sound very psychological. I mean, you use more maybe quantum terms, you talk about frequency, but it does sound like you're looking at how did I get here and how do I let go of those belief systems that define me?
Yes. No, I totally believe in psychology, and complement, we actually say train a lot of psychologists, in a sense. So think of it, Amy, as there was an intelligence that, say, rendered you, or a blueprint that rendered you before you were a single cell. There had to be an intelligence that rendered you before you were a single cell, before you had a brain. Does that make sense for you? Okay. Otherwise, you would just be a blob. Again, there had to be a blueprint. So that's the intelligence that I help people access. Your original code, your original blueprint, I call it the inception frequency that generates, say, space and time, which solidifies into physical form. But we'll leave that outside. So there are a few steps before that, and then say your brain. And so this is where, in psychology, we start to go, so a lot of things happened before you have psychological events happen. So psychology is great to be an observer, of, say, the situations that you get yourself into. So you can use psychology to go, oh, how did I get into this space? Asking questions like that. But most people, they use their brain, like Tony Robbins and Joe Dispenza, and it's like, this is where I am. And to change it, I'm going to edit my psychology, which is fantastic. But you're still that person, but you're just putting, say, a different label or a different lens, or you're numbing your experiences. What I'm saying is, like, you can use your psychology to go, well, how did I get here in the first place? What was the circumstances? Let's go into the black box and understand who I am. Before I was even born, because before you were even born, again, you were a mixture of those four ingredients that I talked about earlier. So it goes deeper into that. It goes upriver. And this is where you change your frequency or that blueprint. And then your psychology, allows you to enhance who you are even deeper rather than, say, creating, to, It allows you to change your identity of who you are before psychology takes place.
So can you give an example of what this would look like in practical terms? Like someone comes to you, what are they presenting with? What do they look
Sure.
like? And then how
Sure.
do you shift that frequency without really, I mean, this is feels like quantum leap work. Like, when I'm
It is.
working with people, it takes time. This feels like you can kind of time jump.
It is. And if you go to the website, there's, I don't know, thousands of testimonials on people transforming. I was at a show earlier today here in LA earlier this week, and people did literally quantum jump into their new existence. So the way it works is, with my abilities, and you can do this on your own, but I just do it faster for you. What happens is that, hey, it's like, hey, Moss, I've been traumatized as a child, and now I'm like 30, 40 years old, right? So what they do, in psychology and mindset change, is like, okay, let's take a look at that traumatized child, and then we have a traumatized child, and let's create a workaround around that trauma. So you it feels better for you, so you minimize, say, the storyline that you're sending out. Does that make sense for you? That's what most psychology and most therapy, and again, like Tony Robbins, Joe Dispenza does. So that core issue still exists in you, though. You basically are running, say, a frequency that hits and says, oh, traumatized child, and from there it, say, it bounces off and it distorts your life pattern. And psychology and everything else just tries to put that back into, say, coherence, all right, or stability. So what I do, or what we do, is literally go, wait a second, let's see if we can change the value of, say, that trauma for you. And that's what I do. You can't change what happened in time, but you can take away the meaning of what happened to you so you understand it and learn from it. And I'll give you an example. You know, when you're a kid, or, you know, my daughters, you know, I've got six kids, you know, but my girls, you know, they play with dolls. And, you know, as a little girl, you know, the heads of their dolls pop off. And it's a traumatic experience. It's huge, you know, because they don't know how to handle it. But then as you grow up, we can use, say, that wisdom of age to go back, you know. And for me, it's like you just pop the head back on the doll and it's fine. That makes sense for you. You can't change what happened. So, you know, as you get older, you start to see a different perspective on, say, why it happened. Rather than seeing through the lens of trauma, you rise above it and you become an observer of that trauma and you go, oh, I understand what happened. And a lot of times, once we understand why it happened, we start to delete that pattern from us. And sometimes it's really, really, really fast.
And so your ability to see right into that and help that person change their frequency changes that potentiality, yes. I guess, for the outcome of what their life looks like.
Yes, it is the observer effect in quantum physics. You know, as soon as you become the observer without the filters, you see the truth of who you are versus the distortion of, say, the experience that has created you. That's really the key at a deeper level. You see the potential of who you are without the trauma. And then as you see that, you go, oh, now that trauma has now become a learning experience for me. So you do not, say, build your identity through the trauma. You become an observer of the trauma, and then you become a ninja, and you literally resolve your issue that you have.
Thank you. That helps clarify things, certainly for me, and hopefully for many of the listeners out there as well. I'm curious, too, to jump back to what we were talking about of the state of things today and where some of the leaders that we found, spiritual leaders, are. Mm-hmm. How do you see them thinking that they were embodying what it meant to be a spiritual leader in this space, and yet perhaps lying to themselves and to the world about this, and what it has done to so many who are observing this now in terms of, you know, can we separate, or should we be separating the teacher from the teachings? And, you know, what this all means.
I like that you said, should we be separating, you know, the knowledge or wisdom from the teacher? And that's actually what I teach, because, you know, when you're learning something, you actually, you know, when you encode it in your brain, you actually encode, say, the environment that you learned from as well. So if you're learning from, say, a man, and this, Teresa, this gets into why women, say, are, say, more oppressed, or because a lot of the teachers are men for some reason. So if you're being encoded in that, and, you know, a lot of women, say, for example, learn from success from men, well, then they turn more masculine, right? Because they think success is a masculine frequency. So going back to, you know, whether they're spiritual people, whether they're political people, there's a lot of scientists, you know. So again, if we step one layer back, why are all these highly intelligent people, you know, in that situation? It's not, say, the knowledge. It's not the intelligence. I mean, Deepak Chopra has knowledge, and he's helped millions. But that knowledge, why didn't it work for him? Why didn't he be coherent? It's because the fuel that he used, or the sacrifices that he made, again, the presence of who he was, he sacrificed his presence of who he was for the physical knowledge, for money, for whatever it is. And in that scenario, your core existence, or your purpose of to be here, is to enhance, say, the presence of who you are, so you can remember the potential of who you are. Most people do it the other way around. They go, well, if I get this knowledge, therefore, you know, I'll come back and then help the world. But then they don't have any, they can't embody that knowledge because they sold, say, their soul. They sold their presence, so there's nothing left. And what they do, if there's nothing left, they have to borrow presence from other people, unfortunately. And young children have more presence than adults. Hence, this is like, why would they do heinous things to, you know, young children or even infants? Because they've got the most presence, if that makes sense for you. So the key is that, sure, they're on the list, but how many, you know, those people that are listening, what have you sacrificed your presence for? You know, have you sacrificed yourself for love? Well, and you can feel it right away, you know, where it's like you sign a deal and you just feel an emptiness in your presence. It's like, damn, what did I just do? Basically, you paid way too much for that experience. And it doesn't embody you because there's nothing to embody. That's what we got to ask ourselves. Those individuals that are on the list, they just basically spent, you know, most of their presence faster than most people. But all of society literally sacrifices, and that's the key. You sacrifice, instead of sacrificing backwards, they sacrifice forward. So in that case, they sacrifice their identity, their presence of who they are, to achieve physical, say, wealth, knowledge, and talents, whatever it might be, spirituality. That's not the purpose. What we want to do, like we talked about earlier, you want to sacrifice backwards. It's like, what is it? Who am I that I am? Well, who am I really not? You know, I am not my parents' diseases. I'm not my parents' identity. I am not my society's identity, my generational patterns, or anything like that. As you release or sacrifice those, say, self-image identities, you become a pure version. So your presence enhances. And as your presence enhances, the knowledge that you partake in, whether it's science or spirituality, becomes part of you. That knowledge becomes wisdom. So there's not separation. In Deepak's case, it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't his knowledge. He did not say attune from it. He just repeated or rehashed knowledge from ancient wisdom. A lot of people do that, but they don't enhance the knowledge. They, again, it's like 1,000 years old and it's just rehashed knowledge from 1,000 years ago. What I'm saying is, once you understand who you are, that 1,000-year-old knowledge can be good, and then you put your mix into it because you're an enlightened, you know, you're a wise being, and it's that knowledge becomes today's, say, standard, not 1,000 years ago.
Or you're actually embodying that knowledge, and then
exactly
putting your spin on it.
Exactly.
However, absolutely, that comes forth. And that's what, yeah, you're talking earlier about, the work, yes, of the self.
Yes.
But not at the expense of.
Exactly. What are you spending? Again, you need to let go of the things that you're not to embody the knowledge that you are. And just to go a little deeper, I know we don't have much time, but just go deeper. That knowledge already exists in you already. You know, so once you acknowledge it, it just becomes you, and you raise your consciousness. You raise, if people want to know what consciousness or how to raise your consciousness, most people go, well, if I do good things, if I help people, if I'm kind, you know, all those definitions are misconstrued, because in most cases, just reading your audience, you know, being kind is literally, well, I'm sacrificing my presence for other people. That's not kind to you or the people around you, because you're not helping them evolve yourself, or them. What you want to do is like, okay, this person has a problem, you know, is there a situation in me that resonates with their problem? How can I fix it for myself? As you fix it for yourself, like in psychology, you know, you fix it for yourself, and then that person that connects with you, you help them heal, or have, you know, help them, say, solve their problems. So you both enlighten, you both, say, fix that problem. Most people, unfortunately, just, you know, tapping into your audience, it's like, I'll forgo myself, or I'll forsake myself to help others. The world doesn't need that, because it creates a lot of problems and it creates a lot of, say, burdens on society.
Mm. And how much do you think that's where we are right now, is that we have sacrificed ourselves, plural, for service of the betterment of others. And now here we are.
Amy, that's the pandemic. I'll give you a physical example. Say that we could measure, you know, because in science, you know, we have to measure something. So say we could measure burdens. So say somebody comes in and it's like, I have a problem, and you're kind to them. Basically what that means, or it's like philanthropy, or, you know, I want to find a solution. It doesn't matter, you know, solution for global warming and all that. It doesn't matter what it is you want, you know, what you want to save the planet, let's say. So what we do is literally go, that person has 50 pounds of burdens or problems. And basically what people do out of kindness or a solution is like, hey, you know what? Let me take your 50 pounds of burdens. I'll put it upon myself. You sacrificed your identity for that. So what that means is like you didn't teach that person how to not create more. And since they sold their problems, then that person goes, oh, well, I'll just make more. They create another 50 pounds. So now you have 100 pounds versus if you eliminated the 50 pounds completely, you'd be at zero. But just think of all the billions of people that are going, hey, I'll take your problem on. You just doubled the weight of the world.
Wow, so, I'm going to have to jump in there, but I don't want to. But you know, I was taking notes.
Yes.
Amy, your crystal clear questions getting right to the heart of the matter. Thank you. And Mazati, thank you for expanding our thinking and challenging us to tune in rather than tune out. And yes. To everyone listening, pay attention to your intuition and dreams this week, not just the ones at night, but the ones stirring in your heart right now from this astonishing conversation with Mazati and Dr. Amy Robbins, because in changing times, your intuition is not luxury, it is guidance. Going to close tonight with a few bars of a piece of music that captures the emotional power of awakening and the courage it takes to step into new consciousness. This is Experience by Ionaudi, a track that builds and builds, expands and rises, just like human awareness itself. Listen to it deeply now and let it remind you that whatever happens, you are strong and you are beautiful from the inside out.